there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Hey, Green Future Growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get enter to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today I am super excited because it is June 13th and I am back on my mic and off for summer vacation. Almost, I don't quite officially have my classroom cleaned out, but basically school's out, kids are gone, and I'm back to podcasting. So I'm excited to reach out to listeners, the Green Future Growers. See you if you're in the Facebook group. I will try to be way more active there. I've already been gardening with Mike a little. And so hopefully this episode will hit your ears very, very quickly here, maybe even before this weekend, if possible. And I am super excited because I have a great guest today. We tried to connect over Easter break and I got sick. And she's going to talk to us about staying healthy and about doing different things. So she is called the Kombucha Mama, and she's the originator of the Kombucha Camp Workshop. And so she's going to tell us about her mission to change the world one gut at a time, maybe even starting with mine, because I could use some extra help there. So I'm super excited to introduce Hannah Crum. So welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast, Hannah.
Thanks, Jackie. Great to be here.
Well, I'm so glad it's fun to talk on my mic again. So go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what is kombucha? Am I even saying it right?
You are. You're definitely saying it right. So it's kombucha with an O. You get people in the Midwest going kombucha and they spell it with an A, but that's not exactly right. Okay. But basically kombucha is fermented tea. And so I first discovered it back in the early 2000s. I was visiting a friend from college and he was in San Francisco, which is a very groovy city. And one of the neat things in his apartment was this box of jars. They were covered with towels. They had these weird floaty things. And he goes, "That's the kombucha." I never heard of it. We didn't even try it, but I was just intrigued. Like, the word's funny, right? Kombucha, kombucha. It just, it's entertaining.
Fun to say.
Exactly. So when I got back to Los Angeles, lo and behold, at the Whole Foods, of course, there's an entire case of kombucha. So I grab one off the shelf and I take my first sip. Now, have you ever tried kombucha, Jackie?
I have not.
Okay. Well, it's so basically kombucha is an acetic acid ferment like vinegar. So it's essentially tea vinegar. So you can imagine for a lot of people, their first sip, you might go, oh, get that like sour kombucha face or vinegar face. For me, I love the flavor. But the reason is I was the girl sneaking the pickle juice out of the pickle jar when my mom wasn't looking because she'd always yell at me if I did that. But that kind of salty, sour, fermented, funky flavor was just something that really I enjoyed. And then I felt the kombucha in my body. And it really is, you know, like when you pick a vegetable out of your garden and you grew it and you know everything that went into it. And then you take your first bite and there's just this like, it's a rush that's beyond just the flavor. There's like, you can tell that it's alive and is nourishing. And that was the experience I had with kombucha, was it just felt alive and I wanted more of it. But then, like a lot of people, my thirst quickly outgrew my budget and I decided to get my own mysterious jars. And that's kind of what set me on this whole kombucha journey.
Awesome. Well, your passion and excitement just comes through. And it's like, it's so apropos for me right now because it is June and like everything is fresh. And to like taste a piece of Mike's lettuce that he's grown in the garden, or just like even the other day, I just ripped up two leaves of arugula and just put that in my salad. And it was just like, it was bursting with flavor because yeah, they came, they're so fresh. They're right here. We just picked them. And that's great to hear.
Yum. Yeah, so that's and then what's really kind of interesting and why I'm on your podcast today, Jackie, is that kombucha actually has a lot of applications beyond just using it to make a beverage to drink. And so we're going to talk about some of that. But my first kind of garden experiences come from my dad. He grew up on a farm in southern Minnesota, a town of like 200 people, and every summer we'd get shipped out to the grandparents and dropped off there. And my grandma had this amazing garden under a willow tree, and we would swing from the willow branches like we were Tarzan. And across the street was a John Deere shop, and we'd go clamber up on the tractors and stuff. And then my dad would grow tomatoes, peppers. He taught me that the marigolds have to be planted in between to help keep the bugs away. He loved cooking with fresh herbs, and I was often the sous chef who had to go out and gather the herbs and pick all the leaves off. So I really have great memories of those gardening experiences.
Nice. Oh, that brings back a lot of memories. Yeah, kids getting shipped off to grandparents. I'm thinking I'm gonna get to, I actually have to go to a training next week, so I'm hopefully gonna see some of my grandkids next week. So then is that how you learned how to garden organically? Like from your dad? Was he organic, or like he's got the marigold, so he's doing the companion planting?
Yeah, well, my grandparents grew, I think, beets and onions. So he grew up in the fields, weeding, doing all that kind of, on the land stuff as a kid. And I think maybe later in life they might have gone more pesticide route. I don't actually know much about the farm because by the time I was getting older, they'd kind of transitioned away from farming into other things like auctioneering and real estate and stuff like that. And so, but my dad never used any kind of fertilizers or anything. But on the other side of the coin, we also didn't have a composter. I made my own several years ago in my backyard here in Los Angeles, and I love working with the worms and how they turn all of that stuff into this rich, beautiful black earth. And that's what leads to all my volunteer tomatoes popping up every year. I'll find them in the weirdest places just because that's all the seeds have been in the compost.
Those are some of the best ones, though, because they come up naturally and you didn't plant them. And they sometimes those can be stronger than tomatoes that you plant.
Yeah, they're super hardy.
All right. Well, so tell us more about kombucha.
Yeah, so kombucha is in some ways similar to gardening, and here's how I think about it. Is like, we need to have a really rich soil that's nutrient dense, that has the right microbial balance so that the plants are able to uptake that nutrition, right? Like plants don't just absorb it from the soil, they need the bacteria to interface in order to create that nutrition for them. Well, we're like that too, in that our guts are the soil for our bodies, and we need to have that full of a good diverse microbiome, a lot of different organisms in there, so that we can uptake nutrition from the food that we're putting into our bodies and create our nutrients that way. So, kombucha is one of many fermented foods. So, fermentation, as people might know more familiarly, is, like sauerkraut and pickles used to be fermented. We also have vinegar preserve. But all of these fermented foods was the original way that we preserved our foods back when we didn't have a refrigerator. I know we take that appliance for granted, but 150 years or so ago, we didn't have those luxuries at home. And so we had to find other ways to preserve the harvest, and fermentation was one of those ways.
And I think, a lot of people around the world today still don't have refrigeration.
No, you're that's absolutely correct. And what's interesting about the United States is we're while we came from a bunch of different places that have deep-rooted food traditions, we came to a country that just really didn't. And we sort of made things up as we went along. And I think post-World War II, we allowed this whole processed foods industry to slowly replace the traditions of having a garden, preserving, all of those values that we see touted on the World War II posters, right? Like, it's patriotic to plant a garden, and everyone should have chickens. We kind of turned all of that over to a processed food industry. And unfortunately, that's had a negative effect on our bodies because they've resorted to using the lowest cost, lowest quality inputs. And unfortunately, our bodies are suffering as a result of that. So getting back in the garden, getting fermented foods, these are just some of the important ways we can start to repopulate our microbiome in a positive way.
Do you want to talk about what a microbiome is?
Yeah, sure. So the microbiome is, you know, there's bacteria everywhere. So I don't mean to freak anybody out, because I know we've been waging germ warfare for the last however many years or so, right, with all the bactericides and hand sanitizers and things like that, which, you know, thankfully the FDA has just come out and said, they're now banning tricycline. But what happens is the microbiome is all the bacteria and organisms that live on your body, and you're like a planet. So, right, you go to your armpit, you've got a dark, dank rainforest under there. You go to your arm and it's like a dry desert, And so our body has all these same different terrains, and each one is populated with different types of organisms that keep the body safe and they protect you. And inside of your body, inside of your digestive system, so it goes all the way from your mouth to the end of you, everything is covered with bacteria. And what happens is when we're overexposed to toxic chemicals or pesticides or things like this or overprescribing antibiotics, we kill off the organisms that are there to protect us. And unfortunately, that leaves space for organisms that aren't native to either overpopulate, such as candida overgrowth, or to pick up organisms that aren't supposed to be there anyways. And this is where a lot of like SIBO and bacterial infections and all kinds of things can go wrong. And even more to the most basic level, right? If we go back to Hippocrates, who said all disease begins in the gut. And I think with the research on the human microbiome, which really didn't start until 2010, we're really starting to uncover so much information about autism, Parkinson's, alcoholism, rheumatoid arthritis, like anything you can think of, these totally disparate illnesses. So often they're going, the gut is in dysbiosis. There's something wrong with the gut. The gut is out of balance. And so whether we know specifically what strain, which I try not to focus on like, oh, the one thing, because I think the one thing mentality is kind of what lands us in this situation. It's diversity, just like nature. We need a diversity of organisms populating our body. And in fact, we carry them around with us everywhere. We have a microbial cloud. So when I'm on the road and I'm at speaking engagements, like I'm really selfish. I say a hug or a handshake. Like you're not getting away from me without sharing some of your bacteria, because it's only going to make me stronger.
That's a great way to look at it. Wow. Okay. So tell us about the kombucha camp then.
Kombucha camp started as a workshop in my home, because while kombucha is really simple to make, basically we make sweet tea. And that's just tea. We steep it. We add sugar to it. And all of the specific recipe and instructions is on our website, kombuchacamp.com. Just click on recipe. You can download it there or just read it. But we make this sweet tea solution. We add our culture to it, and then it turns it into this tangy, healthy beverage. But because we've lost this connection to our grandparents or our parents showing us how we do fermentation, teaching us the right ways to do it, and demystifying that process, there's a lot of anxiety around kombucha. And when you add to that, mainstream media likes to harp on like, oh, there's no proof, and oh, you could contaminate yourself if you make it at home. I mean, these are outlandish statements that have no basis in reality. Because if that were true, then, people would have stopped fermenting it ages ago. Why would you perpetuate something? Why would you share something with other people if you know it's going to cause them harm? Right. So it just logically, it doesn't make sense. And then from a scientific perspective, because it's an acetic acid ferment like vinegar, you're talking about an incredibly low pH. And that low pH coupled with the healthy acid profile has been shown in numerous studies to kill, Salmonella, Listeria, all of these pathogens on contact. Now I take that another step and I think, okay, so thinking about bacteria, if pathogens were so strong, if they were so dominant, we'd all already be dead, right? Because the pathogens would have gotten us and we'd just all keel over. So the reality is there's a lot more good guys than there are bad guys out there. But of course, we have to make sure that we're populating ourselves with as many good guys as possible. And this is, I think of this as like our force, right? We have this microbial cloud we carry around with us. And this is our force that helps keep us strong and healthy.
Okay.
So what this all has to do with gardening, why don't we bring it back to that?
Okay.
is that, you know, the soil-based organisms are also really good for people. And so the bacteria in kombucha, again, because it's that tanginess, if you have acid-loving plants, rose bushes, blueberries, things like that, composting the cultures is a really great way to get positive organisms into your soil. I also toss them right into my compost bin. The worms love them. They help to break everything down very quickly. And then you get this really nice acidified soil that you can spread around and help those particular plants grow. Now, some people will just put them right next to the plants like a soil amendment. Either you put that SCOBY in a blender and then that puree goes into the earth, or you just cut it up into little pieces and bury it underground. Those are some of the ways that we try to re-nutrify the soil with healthy microbes using our excess SCOBYs. So let's back it up one more. A SCOBY, what is that? It's a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. This is what we call our mother. So if you're at all familiar with raw apple cider vinegar, you might sometimes see at the bottom of the bottle this kind of disc object. Well, so that's acetic acid bacteria that creates cellulose. In kombucha, we have similar bacteria that also creates cellulose. And because it's so reproductive, it like makes a new culture with every batch. You end up with loads of these extra SCOBYs. Now, you could certainly throw them away. And my hope is always, you know, if they go in the garbage, they're going to help break down the landfill. Who knows? But people feel really guilty and they don't want to throw them away because they feel like they're their friends or their pets or they're alive. And so they end up with hordes of them. And that's why we try to teach people, you know, there's a lot of ways we can put them back into the world so that they're helping to nutrify it in other ways.
Wow. Well, so that's what the picture is you holding that SCOBY thing that they sent
exactly
the
right.
bio picture?
Yeah.
I was so like, what is that thing?
Yeah, they can get really huge. So that one I took out of a continuous brew that had been sitting for a few months. And so this is what I mean. It's highly reproductive. And I think it's indicative of all things in nature, which is if you give an organism what it needs to thrive, it will. So if you're putting the right nutrients in the soil, you'll notice your plants will be more robust, they'll be healthier, and they don't tend to need pesticides as much because their own immune systems are stronger as a result. Those plants are also then more nutrient dense, something we can look at through BRICS testing. And that's really, you know, I think, unfortunately, we have this myth of needing pesticides, and that's because we're trying to farm in a way that isn't in harmony with nature. You know, nature isn't monocropping. Nature is diversity. Like you were saying, the companions, like the corn, squash, beans trio. When we plant things that are supposed to help each other out together, we end up with more of all of them, as opposed to them competing and taking nutrients from the soil from each other. And so I think the more that we look to how nature operates and try to implement those strategies, we end up with far successful gardens. And even now they're showing, instead of in straight lines, doing it, you know, following the patterns of the earth in order to create more yields with less chemical inputs.
Well, this fits in with everything. Like, so the one thing I've been trying to get done this morning is I interviewed this woman who has this company called Pitmoss, or she works for a company called Pitmoss, and they sell, instead of having to use peat in your potting soil, they sell this stuff called Pitmoss, and it kind of replaces the peat and the vermiculite, and it's a natural, it's a recycled fiber. And I've been trying to get her episode, and then there's two other episodes from February I did, both with soil scientists. Like, soil health is such a huge thing, and it's really imperative to me at this very moment, because Mike's been wanting to buy potting soil, and like the best deal we found is like $180 for 30 cubic feet, which, you know, seems like it's going to be a really good deal and would be about $180 for soil, like, just sometimes. And we're hopefully going to split it with someone, so it's still only $90, but the non-organic soil, I think, option is like $125. But still, it just seems like, you know, soil health is so essential. And then I tried to have a worm bin, and I've been learning and working on the worm bin thing this year at school. So I'm just fascinated with all of this. And the fact that it's a tea, I don't know why, for some reason I was thinking, I mean, it's, but like, I guess I was thinking more like the pickles and the sauerkraut thing, that it was going to be like a vegetable, so that it's a tea. But is it like an herb or something? Do you grow it? Where do you...
Well, so yeah, so it's made from tea, and tea doesn't grow everywhere in the United States, though we are starting to see some tea plantations pop up, like in the South. I think Lipton's has some down in South Carolina. Some other climates are showing some potential. So there are some people now starting to try to cultivate the tea plant, which is Camellia sinensis, here in the United States. But traditionally, of course, it's grown in China, India, and places like that. And that's actually where we suspect kombucha may have originated. Obviously, fermentation has been important in all of those ancient cultures, coupled with the fact that they have ready accessibility to tea. It seems a logical conclusion then that that may have been where it arose from. And in fact, the cha in kombucha is like cha, which is tea in Chinese, Japanese, chai in Indian languages. So it definitely has a tea connection as part of it. Now, to your point, can we use herbs or other things? We often reserve those for flavoring. And in fact, that was where I got the inspiration for my first flavors. I went out and I plucked some lavender flowers and I found some rosemary stems and some sprigs of thyme. And I would infuse that into my kombucha and it'd give it this really lovely herbaceous flavor. And of course, all of those herbs are our friends. The spices are our friends, and they're there to provide additional nutritional benefits. So they don't just add flavor. They aren't just pretty to look at, but then they also really help support our bodies. And I think it's easy to forget that we come from nature, that we are nature, that there is literally no separation between us and the trees and the animals and all of that, because we all inhabit this same amazing planet. But because we have this, we have our computers and all of our technology and we drive our cars and our air conditioning, we feel like, oh, we're not part of that. And I think that leads to a lot of depression and sadness, because we really need to be in contact with nature. And I love how, even like the Japanese word for forest bathing and concepts like these are starting to percolate back into our society, because I think when we take the time, even if we're not the most successful gardener, even just sitting in the soil, pulling up some weeds, getting your hands dirty, there's just a peace and a kind of, I mean, you probably know this better than I do, Jackie, but there's just like a sense of connection, I think, that really satisfies in a deep, on a deep level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why, like, I call my listener, like the people who listen to this podcast, and why is because, we're, like I said, we're all trying to grow a greener future, and just being part of the earth and being in the garden or doing whatever you can to grow things, I think is just something we all share in common.
Absolutely. Well, and then you see how the runoff totally pollutes the waterways, and you end up with these algal blooms, and then the fish start to suffer. And, I think we're starting to really see the negative effects of not caring about where those inputs are going. And that's creating a lot of problems health-wise for not only the waterways and the fish that live in them, but then the humans who also have to consume that. And, the reality is, if we poison ourselves to death, we're the ones who lose, because I think the planet is pretty strong and has proven that. You go back to where Chernobyl happened and it has completely regenerated. Mother Nature is incredibly vibrant and robust, and hopefully we still figure out how to stay here and enjoy it for many more years to come.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially in today, it just seems like it gets scarier and scarier every day. But I don't know. I try to focus on the positive. So we'll stay on that note.
Well, and I 100% agree with you. And I think that looking to nature and witnessing the regenerative power of nature is 100% positive. And just how quickly we can take something that maybe was toxic or wasn't in a positive state. And, like here in California, we have the Bayona wetlands. And before they preserved this area, a lot of the nature and the birds had flown away. And as soon as they started preserving it, they started to come back. And it was interesting. Some people accused the environmentalists of planting birds there to prove that they had come back, when the reality is, if you just give animals the habitat they need, they're going to show back up. So I think there's just a zillion ways that by getting into the garden, looking at nature, reconnecting with that soil, we can feel that positive connection and feel a lot of hope for the future.
Aw, I love that. You're so eloquent. And so passionate about you know, people and protecting our environment and protecting our health. So I think listeners are really going to like this. So do you want to tell us, like, have I forgotten anything, or do you want to answer the questions I usually ask, or we're like,
sure. I mean,
miss anything.
Yeah. I think we can go through some of the questions for sure. And then also if there was anything else you wanted to know specifically about kombucha, obviously we can point them to the website, but if you want more, like, you know, we talked about how it can, the acid helps the acid loving plants. I'm just trying to think of pulling herbs from your garden for flavoring your kombucha. So those are a couple of the things, the worm bin. So I feel like I've covered most of what I wanted to say about kombucha and gardening specifically, but we can try anything else you think.
Okay. Well, let's talk. Now, you said your stuff's starting to bolt in the pre-chat. Like, is there something that grew really well this year? And, like, I mean, my arugula's bolting too, and my spinach and some things. But then, for the most part, Mike doesn't even have most of our stuff in the ground. I don't know. He's probably halfway there.
Well, being in California, we have a long growing season here in Southern California. And as a gift, my husband invited someone to our house and helped set up some gardening boxes. So we had a couple boxes built. We put some mulch in the yard. We planted a bunch of veggies. And again, I'm kind of new to all of this. So, like, my cabbages, unfortunately, they all turned into flowers. I didn't get any heads of cabbage. My broccoli flowered before I could get any, you know, what I look at as familiar pieces. And so I know that I'm, you know, in addition to planting the things, then you have to actually take care of them. And that's the part I haven't totally mastered at this point. So what's doing really well, of course, are my greens. You know, those things are fantastic. So, you know, I'm loving my Swiss chard, my kale, but definitely my lettuce is bolted early because it was warm. And now all of my parsley has grown over and flowered. But, you know, I'm still enjoying all of the little things I get out of the garden.
Yep. Well, it's been a tough year. Mike was just saying this morning, if we don't get some June rain, I mean, we're going to be in trouble. And just like I said, like my arugula, it was like, I think I got one arugula salad out of it or two. Now, part of that's because during the school year, I'm only home on the weekends. But yeah, it just went fat. Like, you're sometimes your window to grab that produce is just, you know, a couple of days, and you just gotta go for it. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to have some things go to, you know, seed either.
Well, I figure they'll just regrow. So I did try to cut back my broccoli, and they sort of regrew a little bit. I did the same with my cabbages. We'll see what happens with those. But more than anything, it's just kind of fun to see the interplay with mm-hmm. the insects and, you know, what else gets attracted to the yard. So I've also tried to plant some flowers to help the bees, so that way we get more pollination. I have a couple lemon trees, like short dwarf lemon trees, and want to make sure that they get some fruit. We also have a kumquat tree, which just goes crazy in the late summer. So, you know, I'm really good at the stuff that doesn't require a lot of effort.
And the other thing Mike found out about broccoli is it's a lot easier to grow them here in the fall because we have the same mm-hmm. heat thing. But he does have a lot of broccoli planted now. But well, how about, what are you excited to try next year then? Is there something new or different you're excited to try next season?
Well, I'm growing some strawberries right now, which is they are yielding some fruit, but then they don't taste good like the ones I get at the farmer's market. And I think that's the exciting part about all of this is honoring and recognizing like how much work and effort actually goes into making produce, so that whether I'm getting it from my garden or I'm picking it up at the farmer's market, there's just another layer of appreciation for all that goes into that process. And I think, you know, again, in a world where food is accessible to us so frequently and we have access to most things year round, it's really important, I think, to just kind of recognize how much effort goes into it. Like, even growing enough arugula to make a salad is, it takes a lot. And then you cut it, you give it that little haircut, and then you got to wait for it to grow back. It's not like you can eat salad every single day if you only have a couple of plants.
Mm-hmm. My problem that I found with the arugula is what I should have done was like put 5 seeds in the ground and then a few days later put another 5 seeds and then another 5 seeds instead of just planting the whole packet. And I see I'm going to do that every year and I never do.
I'm the lazy gardener, I have to admit, but I really love how it just yields. Like, but one of the things I do like to do is I'll take like potato pieces and throw them in the yard. And eventually I'll end up with all these like tiny potatoes, which are very cute. And so I do like to take, you know, the ends of my celery and see if I can get those things to grow. So they, even whether it leads to me having a huge yield or not, just interacting with it and seeing how it goes is just kind of a lot of fun. But then I get the aphids and I'm like, oh no, now what do I do? Those are always the most troublesome for me. But you can put, you know, kombucha or vinegar into a spray bottle. The kombucha sometimes gets too sour to drink if you leave it too long, and especially in summer when it's warmer, it'll ferment more quickly. So if you end up with extra kombucha that you don't want to drink, that's another thing you can do, is put it in a spray bottle and use that to help gently spritz those little bugs away.
Nice. Well, that's good to know. Aphids and bugs and pests are definitely one of the top problems people talk about on my show. So you just throw little potato pieces out and it grow, and they grow into plants? Because like
they
potatoes
do.
Are something Mike spends a lot of time working on and like killing them over, and I don't know, he's got some different potato things going this year.
I don't know if it's just I don't know if it's just here. It's so easy. I just throw them in the ground. I put a little dirt over them. And then, you know, of course, the green tops grow. And since that was a crop my dad grew, he says, well, wait until they fall over and then pull them up. And so that's all I do, is I just kind of let them grow wild. And then, but, you know, I'm not like harvesting enough potatoes to keep us for the whole winter or anything. So it's, you know, a potato here, a potato there.
Yeah, or a potato meal. That's Mike's goal, though, is to grow us enough potatoes for the whole winter. It's been his goal for, and he's gotten us through till February a few years in a row. This year he's like, well, he planted this thing called the mini farm like 2 years ago when we finally dug a deep well. So he's like, this year is going to be our biggest garden ever. He has, I don't know what we're going to do with all the food that's coming out of there. But,
that's a kind, serve it, can it, ferment it.
Yeah. And what was I going to say? But you know what was like a big one for me a couple of years ago that I didn't realize, is that red potatoes have red flowers and white potatoes have white flowers. Uh-huh. I thought that was interesting, that the red potatoes made like these little pink flowers.
I didn't know that. That's so cool.
It's because I'm like you. And I like to just hang out in the garden and take pictures and paint. I like to paint in the garden a lot. So
nice.
I do. There's some work I do. We got this new thing, a broad fork, this year. And that has been so fun. That's like the coolest thing. I don't know how we ever lived without it. And
it's so a tool?
It's like a giant pitchfork, kind of, but not quite. But it's just so great for turning over weeds and new beds, or beds that have like grown in, or Mike's used it for so many things. And so I've been kind of trying to help him with that with a little bit of time I've had off, and doing different and it's like, it's interesting the way it works, like in really hard packed ground it works, in like, you know, it's really nice in a deep bed that's got soft soil to dig through, but it's just been really handy. So I've been trying to get down in the garden more this season than I usually do. We'll see what happens. But I kind of like, and I think a lot of gardeners are like me. We start off in the spring strong, and come August, we're like, what? Garden? Oh.
No, I think you're right. And I think it reminds you that it takes a lot of effort to maintain and be tidy. And of course you get a lot of value out of that effort, and it's very relaxing. But you know, if you live a busy life like me, I like being an accidental gardener, because it just reminds me that even without trying, sometimes nature is very hardy and will come through for you, even though it might benefit from a bit more care.
And I love your appreciation for the people at the farmers market. And I think a lot of my listeners are like that too, where they have access. Some people have great access to a farmers market. Other people live where there's food deserts, but people who do have access, I think, talk a lot about, you know, growing the native plants in your area and the herbs, like you said, and flowers and things that just, you know, enable you to commune with nature in the garden without the added pressure of having to pick your vegetables, because sometimes that can be stressful.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think I've noticed that in tidying up the garden, I've also seen, you know, more bees come around. I have more hummingbirds are close at hand. And so I really love to see how the other aspects of nature interact with the bounty in the garden. And, you know, wanting, I think next year, really what I want to do, since I'm a lazy gardener, is maybe put more flowers that are, you know, that are for the butterflies and for the hummingbirds and the bees, just to allow the pollinators to have some food, because they'll look pretty, they'll be somewhat easy to take care of, and I won't have to feel guilty that I'm not harvesting it quickly enough before it goes to seed.
Yep, I totally agree. I know. And I love, like, right now the chives are blooming. They're always one of my favorites because they bring in the pollinators and they have these beautiful little purple flowers and they last for a long time. They grow in fairly, you know, sandy soil. And so,
and you can
then,
eat
like
them.
You said, yeah, and you can eat them and they come back every year. So you, with very little care. So
yeah, I have this huge green onion plant sitting by my door. So I also have some plants in pots. We have like a combination of like a paved patio and then some dirt. And so I have a ton of plants in pots. And of course in California, succulents are really popular and those are great because they don't require a lot of water, but they look like they came from Mars. Like they're so cool and they come in all these neat colors and then you won't even realize it. All of a sudden it's got an awesome flower coming off of it and you thought it was never going to do that. So those are really fun to watch too. So I like to pick kind of low key plants and put them in, you know, I've got bromeliads in the shade and my jade plant and some other things. And then in the front, we have the lavender and birds of paradise and roses grow great here in California because I grew up like reading Miss Marple books and everyone complaining about how hard it is to have a rose garden in England. Oh. And so I just assumed that roses are really difficult. And yet, here in this climate, they're just super easy. So I love just being able to cut a few stems and put them in the house. And that was actually one of the realizations I just had this year, even though my husband's been encouraging me for a while to just go cut the flowers. I'm like, oh, but they look so pretty and I don't want to take them away. And what I realized is when they die, I deadhead them anyway. So I might as well just cut them when they're still alive and enjoy them, knowing that they're just going to grow back anyways. It's kind of like cutting their hair and they're just going to grow back. So that's been a great revelation.
And I think they grow back more, like
they do, right? Exactly. Like the more you use them, the more robust
they are. I'm the same way. It's like, well, they're so pretty out there. I like to look out there and look at them. I'm getting just as good. And then if you bring them in the house, then you have. Then it's like, am I going to throw that vase away?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Sounds like we have a similar gardening style, Jackie.
Totally. Yes. Well, how about? Do you want to tell us? Well, one thing I was going to say, I know people have asked me a lot of questions about roses. Like, do you have any tips that have worked well for you? Because some people I know, like, get that, is it like the blight on the leaves? And just, do you have any tips for roses in California?
Well, I mean, we use some soil amendments, but I think, again, our compost. So every year, when I turn the compost like twice a year because it'll fill up, of course. It'll get nice and rich. And then I'm kind of, I don't have like an actual composter. I have like a converted garbage can. So what I need to do then is I dig out the top layer. That's going to go right back in. But then all the stuff underneath, I get this lovely richness. And whenever I pass that around, because it's had the scobies in there that are already broken down, like you can't even see the pieces anymore. They've just completely disappeared and been consumed. That I think really helps my roses to do well because I'm putting that, you know, those healthy microbes into the acid-loving soil, acid-loving plants rather, that they are. So I think that has really helped a lot. And I put that with my citrus as well, and they tend to do really well with that compost that I'm creating. And then I just throw more food scraps, more extra scobies, more, you know, sometimes a little bit of cardboard just to make sure the worms have a good variety of things and do it all over again.
Awesome. Those are great golden seeds. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. And now let's get to the root of things. What's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and do?
If it's my least favorite, I'm probably not doing it. I guess the least favorite would be dealing with the aphids because they just drive me crazy. I try to, you know, like some years I've bought ladybugs, but then they all fly away. So I try now to more focus on how can I attack it early and then make sure that I'm consistent with caring for those plants. And also sometimes I like to just let one plant go to the aphids, almost like a sacrifice, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, you guys can have this one, but stay over here. And then I try to tidy them off of everything else. But that's my least favorite thing to deal with in the garden are the aphids and the bugs.
That's interesting. Two things about that. One, somebody said something to me about it. I swear it was something like, if the ladybugs leave, that's good. They've done their job and your aphids should be gone. I don't know if you're finding that. And then I have had other people talk about leaving a plant to the aphids and kind of getting them there. It's also interesting because I read this book on tidying this morning that my principal gave me. And so I'm pretty excited to, I don't know, this woman has like a business where she teaches people how to tidy. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
I like the way you talk about tidying the garden. Yes. So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do?
My favorite activity is to, I like pruning. I don't know. I feel like there's like a communication you end up with your trees or your plants, like the roses or the lemon trees or the kumquats. It's like it tells you kind of like, get rid of this dead piece here and let this new life come through. So I really enjoy that process. There's something about just getting rid of all the old yuck. Actually, that's my favorite thing. So I love to just go around and like pull all the dead leaves off and I like throw everything everywhere on the patio and then I take a big broom and sweep it all together. But I just, that process of pulling out the dead stuff is really enjoyable to me.
Oh, I like that. It's kind of like I feel the same way when I clean the chalkboard. I always think of like wiping it off and starting that new clean slate or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting because that tidying book I've been reading, like she talks about, you know, discarding and really getting rid of things. But then she also has this like, it like talks about like the process of folding your clothes. You're like communicating with your clothes and like pressing your good thoughts into like the outfit that you're going to wear. And just like the way you fold your socks into these little swirls and stand them up in your closet. Like, I don't know how it applies to the, you know, it kind of applies to the garden the same way, the way you're saying you're going to get rid of all that dead stuff and like clear it out. So she talks about filling your house with the joy, like only things that bring you joy. Instead of like you're getting rid of things, you're just saving space for the things that you love.
Well, and I think what's really, you know, the seed that you're hitting on there is just putting love into everything you do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, then you find more joy in those things. Like, I think because we're a consumer culture and we're, you know, constantly exhorted to buy more disposable stuff, we then don't value or appreciate the things we do have. I mean, I positively yearn for a return to craftsmanship and quality over convenience and cheapness, because I think those pieces have more meaning. Like if you've got an heirloom piece, an antique from a family that gets handed down, and because it's durable, you can hand it down. It's not just some, you know, like put it together with a monkey wrench kind of thing. That I think there's just this intrinsic value to it that goes much deeper than the piece itself. And so whether that you're applying that to your clothes, like you're talking about, or applying it to your garden or your bookshelf, you know, anywhere that you can cultivate that love, I think you just put a positive energy around you. The world's so stressful. We need to have these little havens of peace. And if your home is full of clutter, then that's going to be difficult to work in as well.
Yep. I agree. Although sometimes I like my clutter, but I've been finding all these things lately that I'm like, I haven't seen in a while. And it's like, to me, it's like, oh, there you are, old friend. I've missed you. And maybe now it's time for us to spend some time together. And just, if I get rid of all my old stuff, like I have lots of stuff I won't use for a year or two. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's right back there as being valuable again.
I'm like you. I like that too. But you know, one thing that my friends here do is we have clothing swaps. So quarterly or so, a group of us, not always the same people, but we get together, we clean out our closets. And what's really cool is when you see kind of some of the same pieces will come back around, and or it's the joy of somebody really finding pleasure in something that you no longer want, and just feeling like, oh, I gave somebody something that they wanted and they're going to really love this. And I don't know, there's just something about that kind of recycling aspect that really we all enjoy in our clothing swap group. And so that I think is a fun way to let things go and maybe have a second life in the community. And who knows, maybe it'll come back your way and you'll be like, okay, I'm ready for this again. And then the rest of the stuff we donate to, you know, people in need. And so it all ends up going to a good place.
Yep, that's for sure. We have really good thrift stores and like food I don't know. They call it the food pantry, but it's like our local thrift store. I think there's like 5 thrift stores in Eureka nowadays, though. And then there's others in Whitefish and Kalispell, and just, yeah, there's a lot of places to recycle and donate clothes.
My grandpa was the first one who took me thrifting, so I've been a thrifter for a long time. I love thrift.
Nice. Me too. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Oh, that's good. The best gardening advice I ever received was to don't fight nature. Let nature take its course and trust that the buds are going to bloom. And, you know, I think nature teaches me just to be patient. And sometimes I'll see like the little lemons starting to form and then they'll fall off and I'll be so disappointed. Like, my little lemon didn't grow. But I think that's just, you know, I think it's part of relearning patience and process and really trusting in the outcomes that come. That might not be practical advice that you can apply to everybody, but it's pretty good advice in general.
I like that. How about a favorite tool? Is there something you can't live without? Like if you had to move, you would want to
move? My pruning shears. And then my pokey stick for the compost. So it's not exactly a pitchfork. It's like a long, almost like a railroad tie. It's just this long stainless, not stainless. It's like a big, I don't know, iron maybe. But it's so invaluable because compost is hard and you do need to turn it. And so I like how it's able to get in there and help me turn all that stuff over. And then you see all the bugs and everything come up.
Yeah. I love turning the compost too. We just use a pitchfork. I'm curious about your keep it in a garbage can. Do you have like a picture of that?
I do. I'll send it to you. It's like a big garbage can. The plastic I put like some gravel and a like a screen on the bottom, and then there's a hole in the side of it so the liquid can come out. It used to have a hose and that fell off. I keep it propped up and so the liquid can drain out and I just throw things in the top. It works out great.
Nice. How about a favorite recipe from the garden?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Herbs in your kombucha?
100%. So one of my favorite recipes, and it's in the book, The Big Book of Kombucha, which anyone can grab, is the tomato and feta salad recipe. So I'll harvest those little tomatoes growing in my garden. I harvest some of my herbs. And then we make this really yummy vinaigrette with some of our kombucha vinegar and a little feta cheese. And it's just one of the best tastes of summer. So delicious. A little olive oil, good olive oil in there makes it a little rich. So that recipe is fantastic. I can, you know, you can find it in the book or I can get you a copy maybe to share.
Okay. Awesome. That sounds so good. How about a favorite internet resource on the internet?
Favorite internet resource for gardening?
Or for kombucha, or you could talk about your website. It's fine.
Yeah, no, the best resource for information on kombucha, if you've read conflicting information, just go to kombuchacamp.com. That's camp with a K. We make it real easy. We've been doing this for, you know, over a decade, almost going on 15 years now. I've read every paper that's written on kombucha. Like, we just have a real passion for our product, and we have a passion for education. And so we try to dispel a lot of the fear and myths about kombucha and give you information that's easy to use and empowers you to then learn how to do it yourself.
Cool. How about a favorite reading material or book? Or do you want to talk about your book? We didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, the Big Book of Kombucha came out in March of 2016. It's 400 pages on the subject. A lot of that is technique and how to, troubleshooting, lots of pictures, which is really helpful because if you've never seen a kombucha SCOBY, they can look really weird and they can take a bunch of weird shapes. And so having those photos is really helpful. And then there's a bunch of recipes. So cooking recipes, 260 flavoring recipes. And then we also have an appendix where we talk about, you know, the benefits of kombucha from a scientific research paper perspective. So it has a great reputation. And now what we're doing is putting some of that information with resources so that you can do your own research to understand why kombucha is something that can be helpful for a lot of different people. But it's been fantastic. It's been very well received. It's won a Silver Nautilus Award. We also are a bestseller on Amazon, and you can find us in all the Amazon flagship stores. So we're really grateful for everyone who's enjoyed the book and showed up and given us a review, because that has allowed us to really get the word out to more people.
All right. Well, I'm always big on telling listeners or like promoting reviews. So if you get it from Amazon, or even if you get it somewhere else, I still think you can leave a review on Amazon.
Definitely.
I'm not sure about that, but I think so, right? Even
if
you didn't
buy
it from them, because you could read it at the library and you can still leave a review.
Exactly. You've got like the verified purchase reviews, and then you have the people just reviewing the book.
Oh. All right. Ready for my final question?
Yes.
Cool. If there's one change you'd like to see to create a greener world, Tiana, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I think the most crucial issue is teaching children where their food comes from. And so I am so heartened by all of the school gardening programs, by the urban gardening programs that are springing up that are really helping to serve the food deserts. And just remembering that, you know, the first grocery store didn't exist until 1946. You know, it's really recent that we've been so disconnected from our food supply. And so the earlier we can help people realize that, in fact, you know, all you need is a piece of earth, some determination, and some, you know, some love, and you can create a food source for yourself. And the more that we can help people recognize that, how simple that is, I think we're going to be in a much better place.
The first grocery store didn't exist until 1946.
Yeah, in terms of like one of those supermarket type grocery stores, those, I mean, they really haven't been around that long. And right, see, your question right there just highlights how much of a recent phenomena this insane amount of, you know, basically junk food or processed food and all this stuff exists. Like, we had gardens, it was in our cellars, it was, you know, from the farmer's market, it was, you had a relationship with the milk person who dropped it off at your doorstep. You know, I mean, we had a different food system before this whole processed industry rose up. And I'm hoping that we can remember to go back to our roots and recultivate that love of gardening, that love of caring for the earth. And I think a lot of positive aspects will come out of our stewardship in that way.
I totally agree. Oh, you've been such a lovely guest and just so eloquent. And I know listeners are going to love this. Do you have like an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Well, our motto is trust your gut. And that means listening to the innate wisdom that you already have. If you're feeling a whisper to get back to the earth, listen to that impulse. Go do it, because that's, you know, the wisdom within you saying, hey, I need this. I need, you know, nutrition isn't just about food. It's about sunlight. It's about getting our hands dirty. It's about doing things that nourish our entire being and our soul. And so much of that is missing when we end up in couch lock or, you know, as stuck staring at a screen all the time. So if you're hearing those whispers, go do that and trust your gut.
Aww. Okay, and do you quickly just want to tell listeners again your website and like how to connect with you?
Yeah, so you can find us all over the interwebs for kombuchacamp.com. That's camp with a K. Of course, we're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. So anywhere that you enjoy getting your content, we are probably there. Just search for Kombucha Camp and we'll show up. We also have a free ebook and recipe guide that you can download at our website. I'll share the link with Jackie. And then we answer a ton of questions. So if you're not sure you're starting the process, go ahead, reach out with an email. We're a small family business, so if you're considering grabbing something and aren't totally sure what to get, go ahead and give me a call. That number goes right to my cell phone. I'm always happy to help guide you through that process.
Oh my goodness. Okay, there you go, listeners. Well, thanks so much, Hannah, for coming on and sharing with us and dealing with my crazy schedule, and just I appreciate everything.
Well, thank you, Jackie. I appreciate having the opportunity to share about kombucha and gardening and other thoughts on life. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.